This week's Parashat Yitro, it's very easy to identify what the central story in Yitro is, and it's Matan Torah. Of course, there's a lot to talk about Yitro himself and Yitro's advice and the relationship between Moshe and his sons and Yitro and Moshe and his wife. That's all an interesting piece. The event of Matan Torah and the content of Aseret HaDibrot is fascinating. We spent a lot of time on that. But I want to actually look at what I believe is also a critical piece in that story, which is the buildup. As a matter of fact, when we read the Torah in Shavuot, the universal minhag is to read from Bachodesh HaShlishi and includes all the prefacing and all of the preparatory moves made towards Matan Torah. And there is a theme that appears several times in that story that I want to explore here. And I believe it's a theme that appears and that makes its way through many stories in Tanakh, and I think we can find a common thread in that. I want to start, oddly enough, with an Agadah instead of starting with Psukim, and it's an Agadah that shows up near the beginning of that long series of Agadot about Matan Torah, which is on Daf Peichet, Peitet, in Shabbat, where we get a lot of our very well-known Agadot and Kafaleim Har Kegigit, etc. And it starts as follows: Darashahu Glila Alei Derav Chista. So there was some Galilean who came to Babel, and he gave the following drasha in the presence of Rav Chista. So that puts us in the middle, towards the end of the 3rd century in Surah. Brich Rachmana, blessed is God, Diyahav. Urian Tlitai, a threefold light, La'am Tlitai, to a threefold nation, Al Yedei Tlitai, through the agency of a third, Biyom Tlitai, on the 3rd day, Biyarcha Tlitai, in the 3rd month. Now, this drasha has been raked over and plowed through numerous times over the centuries, try to discover whether there's something special about the number three. Is he just tying together different components of Matan Torah? Let's clarify what the words mean. Urian Tlitai, a threefold Torah, meaning Torah Nevi'im Ktuvim, is the way we generally understand it. La'am Tlitai, a threefold nation, idea is Kohanim Levim Yisraelim. Adei Tlitai, because Moshe Rabbeinu is the third in his family. I'm going to skip Biyom Tlitai in a second, because you can see from the highlight that that's the focus, and from the title, that's the focus of the shiur. And Biyarcha Tlitai in the 3rd month. Now, these thirds are not of a kind. Some of them are thirds in the sense of ordinal counting, like the 3rd month, the 1st month, 2nd month, 3rd month. Sometimes these thirds are not so much an ordinal piece, but the fact that there are three parts to it, like the Torah has 3 parts and the nation has 3 parts. And of course, being the third born is somewhat more like Yarchet Litoy, but it's also different, right? Because you're an individual person as opposed to the sequence of months. Yom Litoy and Yarchet Litoy would seem to be the same. They're both about dates and the 3rd day and the 3rd month. Now, what does the 3rd day mean? That's what I'm going to get to. Parenthetically, this Agadah is so well known, it even came up in something that we did 4 weeks ago, for 3 weeks ago, when we talked in Parshat Vayera, and I spoke about the census, that odd genealogy that appears at the beginning of Va'era. I had on the source sheet the comment of the Kli Yakar, who said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to demonstrate that he's looking for threes. So therefore he starts with Reuven, who has 4 sons, and then he gets to Shimon, who has 5 sons. That's no good. Gets to Levi. Oh, 3 sons. There we go. And so that even this Agadah seems to animate some of the Parshanut, albeit not Pshat Parshanut, even on that piece there. What is Yom Tlitai? So, instead of discussing it, let's look at it in the text. Now, the beginning of this chapter, well known, the whole chapter is well known, is that Moshe, they arrive at Har Sinai. It's the 3rd month. We don't know what day it is, although Chazal say when Bayom Hazeh means Rosh Chodesh. They arrive in the 3rd month. And by the way, we have given no dates whatsoever for the rest of the narrative of Matan Torah. All we know is they arrive in the 3rd month. We know nothing else. Everything else is based on traditions, based on Midrashim. And Hashem summons Moshe to the top of the mountain and says to him, Go to Bnei Israel and ask them if they want the Brit. And if you do accept the Brit, then you will be Mamlechet Kohanim and Goy Kadosh. And Moshe comes down. And Moshe then asks the people, do you want to enter the Brit? And they say, we want to enter the Brit. And Moshe tells Hashem they want to enter the Brit. Moshe is a classic middleman on this. And here we go. Vayomer Adonai Moshe. Hinei anochi ba'elecha me'av he'anan. And this pasuk, which parenthetically the Gemara says, is, as you see, pasuk tet, is in the Babylonian tradition, one pasuk. In the Eretz Yisrael tradition, it was read as three pasukim. You have a whole lot of aliyah make out of this pasuk. This pasuk says, speaks volumes to the event of Matan Torah, as you'll see. Hinei anochi ba'elecha me'av he'anan. Hashem says to Moshe, I am going to come to you in the thickness of a cloud, ba'avu yishma ha'am b'davrimach, so that the people will hear when I speak to you. Now, until now, what's happened? Hashem has spoken to Moshe, and evidently, people were not aware of it. Moshe went to the top of the mountain. Hashem spoke to him, and Moshe came down and said, "This is what Hashem said." There's going to happen here. There's going to operate in a new system, which is, I'm going to appear to you in the thickness of a cloud, and the people will hear me talking to you. The Gam b'chayaminu de'olam, which will then establish your credibility forever as really being the Eved Hashem and the Navi Hashem. But again, Moshe divra'am el Adonai. So now Moshe comes and tells the people's words to Hashem, which is they want to enter the Brit. Of course, this is a little bit backwards, but that's the order that we're given is that Hashem tells Moshe, I'm going to appear to you in this cloud, etc. And Moshe then tells the Hashem that the people have agreed to enter the Brit. So now the next step. Now, by the way, just because we're not going to get to it, just to comment on Pasuk Tet, what that means is that at some particular point, there's going to be a cloud covering the mountain. Moshe is going to be in the cloud. Hashem is going to speak to Moshe, and the people will hear something. We don't know what they're going to hear. Are they going to hear the words? Are they going to hear some sort of in scrambled sound? Are they going to just hear a lot of sound? But they'll know that Moshe was in the cloud and Hashem was speaking to him. And then either Moshe is going to come out and they will have all heard the words, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, or they will have heard sound and Moshe will then have to tell them, this is what Hashem said. One way or the other, it establishes Moshe's bona fides. Okay. Now, Moshe Hayomu Machar. So go to the people and sanctify them, unclear yet what that means, today, and we're in the middle of the day, Umachar, and tomorrow, the Chibsu Simlotam. Let them wash their clothes, which we understand halachically mean tahara. V'hayu nechonim layom. Let them be ready for the third day. So I'm going to make this up and say that Moshe went up to the mountain on a Monday. Hashem says to him, on Monday, sanctify them today and tomorrow, Monday and Tuesday, and be ready for Wednesday. Wednesday's Yom HaShlishi. Why? Ki b'yom HaShlishi yered Adonai leinei. Because on that third day, which we're going to right now call Wednesday, just arguendo, Hashem is going to come down in front of everybody on Har Sinai. So what's very clear from this pasuk is Hashem is giving Moshe directive to have the people prepare for this amazing theophany, this public appearance of God and manifestation of God in front of them. And the way to do that is to become sanctified. It involves some sort of tahara, go to the mikveh, sanctify your clothes. There's going to be more to it in a minute. And they should prepare themselves for that third day. Because on that third day, Hashem is going to come down. Now, when Moshe reports this to the people, watch what he says. Vayomer l'am, heyu nechonim l'shloshit yamim. Be prepared for 3 days. Al tigashu elisha, which means have no contact with your wife, which means avoiding sexual contact for those 3 days. Now, that's how he tells them to prepare. What happens on that third day? Now, notice Moshe said 3 days, but 3 days isn't really 3 days. It's not 72 hours. Because on the third day already, biyota boker, in the morning, which means really a day and a half, less than 2 days after he said this. And that's, by the way, part of the whole sugya in Shabbat, which emanates from the Mishnah in there about how many onot they separated for. And the din of polekta sheikh matzera, which is what drives this whole discussion, is how many days there actually were of separation. But I'm looking more from the literary perspective than the halachic perspective in this year. So early in the morning of the third day, and now we have the sounds, the lightning, the cloud on the mountain, a very loud sound of a shofar is being heard. They all start shaking. So Moshe now leads the people towards God, meaning towards the mountain. They camp, they stand at attention at the foot of the mountain. And this is the famous drasha under the mountain, Kafal and Harkagigit. So Har Sinai Ashan Kulo, the whole mountain is smoking. Because God came down in fire. And the smoke came up like the smoke from a furnace. Beforehand, the people were shaking, now the mountain shaking. Vayhi kol ha-shofar, it's a good week, I suppose, to speak about the mountain shaking. Vayhi kol ha-shofar, holech v'chazek miod. And the sound of the shofar is getting stronger and stronger. Moshe yidaber v'alhim yananu v'kol. Which is very unclear what that means. Does it mean Moshe says the words and then God repeats those words? God speaking and Moshe's repeating the words. Is there of an equal sonic decibel level? Vayered Adonai al Har Sinai al Rosh Ahar. And now God's presence comes down to the mountain. Vayikra Adonai the Moshe al Rosh Ahar Vayal Moshe. And Hashem summons Moshe to the top of the mountain. Okay, so stop at this point. I'll ask you. What if you were to describe the mountain, how would you describe it? You see the mountain, what do you see?
Well, you see a mountain, you see a lot, you see millions of people at the bottom of the mountain.
Yeah, but you're one of the people looking at the mountain. What do you see?
You see a mountain that disappears into a cloud at a certain point.
Okay, so cloud and what else? Cloud is one thing, prominent in this story, and there's another thing.
You see fire.
That's the two things. There are climactic and natural, supernatural, but natural manifestations, thunder and lightning, etc., and there's the shofar, but when you look at it, what you see is cloud and fire. Those are the two things that are repeated throughout this description. Okay.
And smoke.
What? Well, smoke is
smoke.
The fire. Correct. Okay. But it's the fire coming down on the mountain, so the smoke is rising. Right? So that's what you see. Now, you are, and remember, I've always noted, whenever you're studying narrative, you have to put yourself in the narrative. So be a member of B'nai Yisrael. And assume for a moment, and I think it's a fairly safe assumption, that you have at least a rough, if not detailed, knowledge of the history of the family and of the big moments of the family. You might not know exactly where Avimelech was when he took Sarah into his house, but you know the big moments. The big moments of your ancestor and your then the other guy's ancestor all standing around grandfather Yaakov's bed and giving a bracha. The memory of taking Yaakov to be buried in Hebron. Big moments are very likely in your head. Brit Ben Avatarim is almost assuredly something you're aware. You're standing at the foot of a mountain and you see a cloud on the mountain. You see fire on the mountain. What event in your tribal, national, ethnic history has to come into mind as something like either we're reliving something or that event foreshadowed this? What must you be thinking about?
Stone.
What?
Stone and Amora.
Interesting, except that that's destructive. Here we don't see any destruction, right? What event? Think about this. A mountain with a fire on top. So I'm going to help you out. What is perhaps the most momentous single instant in Sefer Bereshit is the moment of the Akedah. And the Akedah reverberates throughout not only Tanakh, but Jewish history in all sorts of ways, many of them subtle and many of them quite explicit. Think about this. You're looking up at a mountain and there is fire on top of the mountain. Let's take a look here. Vayashkem Avram baboker. We're going to go to the Akedah. Vayachavosh et chamoro. Avram gets up early in the morning, right after getting the command. He saddles the donkey. Vayikach et shnei na'aravito. He takes two of his lads. Beit Yitzchak b'no Yitzchak. Vayivaka atzei ola. He himself chops the wood for the korban. Vayakov vayelech al-makom ha-shamar lo'im. He gets up and he goes to the place. Him, the three boys, Yitzchak and the two other boys, the donkey, etc. Vayom ha-shelishi. What happens on the third day of their journey? Avram looks up and he sees the place. Now remember, what did God say? Offer him up, or however you understand, on one of the mountains that I'll show you. And here Avram looks up and he sees the place. How does he see the place? Doesn't say God that God says this is the place. Midrash, fantastic Midrash. Makes the following statement. Source 3, source 5, sorry. Ma ra'ah, what did Avram see? Ra'ah anan kashur bahar. He saw a cloud tied up hanging over the mountain. Said, oh, that must be the place. Where's the Midrash getting this from? How does the Midrash have a cloud on top of Har Moriah? But I believe that the Midrash is internally making that connection between Ma'amad Har Sinai and the Akedah, and not chiefly because of the fire element, but because of something else. And after all, Har Sinai is the Anan. That's the first thing you guys said, the cloud covering the mountain. And so if Har HaMoriah is either the first in a pattern of which Har Sinai is the big manifestation, or is foreshadowing Har Sinai, Ma'amad Har Sinai, then that means that the cloud that's described in Har Sinai must also be found at Har Moriah. But where did they get that from? So I'd like to revisit this at the end, because if you take a look at it, you will find that throughout Tanakh, the motif of 3 days or a third day is prominent and is frequent. And I've selected a few of them, which I think speak more to our issue, because some of them really are not that vital. The third day of the Brit Milah, when Shimon and Levi attacked the people of Shechem, may not be vital for our point. It's very vital for the people of Shechem. But take a look here, for instance. When Yosef is in prison, and the butler and the baker share their dreams with him, Yosef's response is that the three vines represent 3 days, and the three baskets represent 3 days. 3 days from now, your fate will be decided. Now, on a pshat level, it's very easy to understand why. Yosef had the schedule of Pharaoh's celebrations and knew that 3 days from now is going to be Pharaoh's Yom Huledet, whether it means birthday or coronation anniversary, whatever it means. And on that day, Pharaoh decides the fate of all of the royal prisoners. So you either are saved or you're killed. All right, so it's very easy. It says, Bo'od Shloshit Yamim. And you have to kind of wonder, why did they get this dream then? Why don't they get this dream a week earlier or the day before? There seems to be something about 3 days of anticipation, 3 days of preparation, that is a theme. Let's see it a little bit more openly manifested. When the brothers, we're moving ahead in the Yosef story. Yosef is viceroy of Egypt. Yosef is Tzatzanat Paneach. And Yosef is playing possum with his brothers. And he accuses his brothers of being spies, etc. What does he tell them first? He says, I'm going to hold you all hostage, and one of you go back and bring your younger brother. Notice what he does. Vayesof otam el mishmar shloshit yamim. He puts them into prison, all of them into prison, for 3 days. And, of course, their expectation is he's going to pull one of us out to go back and bring Binyamin back. That's what they were told. Vayomer alhem Yosef bayom hashlishi, which, by the way, means shloshit yamim is not shloshit yamim. He puts them into prison for 3 days, but he tells them on the third day, as he frees them, zot asu v'chiyot Elohim aniyarei, and then he takes Shimon and he sends the rest of them back, which means shloshit yamim does not mean 3 full days. It means for a 3 day period, which means today and tomorrow, and on the third day, it'll be decided. They don't necessarily know it's going to be 3 days, but that's how long it is. And on the third day, there is some sort of resolution, at least a temporary one, right? We move ahead to the very famous issue, which we've dealt with in the past, which Bnei Israel say to Paro, we want to go out for 3 days to the desert to worship Hashem. That whole issue, whether it's honest, whether it's not honest. But right after Yam Suf, again, we get the same motif. Bnei Israel, after this great success and this great rejoicing, Adonai Yimloch Le'olam Va'ed, go 3 days in the desert, no water, and then immediately start complaining. And there's something there also. When Yehoshua, moving ahead, when Yehoshua, we have only a couple more examples, then we'll bring it all together. When Yehoshua gets his first charge from Hashem, we find out that he gets that charge on the 7th of Nisan. How do we know that? We have very few dates of events in Tanakh. One of the first events that's dated in Tanakh is the crossing of the Yarden on the 10th of Nisan. And 3 days before that, Yehoshua says, sends the officers through the camp, and he says, get everybody ready. In 3 days, you're going to cross. Which means there's today, there's tomorrow, and the next day we're going to cross. And that's exactly what happens there. In the case of Chizkiyahu, Chizkiyahu was sick. He thinks he's going to die. And Hashem tells Yeshayahu to come back to Chizkiyahu. Shuv yamartal Chizkiyahu negid amiko amar adonai Elohei David avicha shamati et filatecha ra'iti ani et imatecha. I've heard your prayer. I see your tears. Hineni rofelach, I'm going to heal you. Bayom ha'shlishi tal ha'beit adonai. On the third day, you can go back to the Beit HaMikdash. Why? Why not just heal him and say, okay, go to the Beit HaMikdash? I said, I'm going to heal you, and on the third day, you go back to the Beit HaMikdash. All of these consistently have this three-day motif. And, of course, a very famous one is Yonah ends up getting swallowed up, and only on the third day or after 3 days does he start praying to Hashem. And what is maybe the most famous one, and it's seasonal, is Esther. What does Esther command Mordechai to do? Tell everybody to fast for 3 days. Again, it's not three full days, as you'll see. It's day and night, but it's not 72 hours. Because in Pasuk Aleph, Ahi Bayom HaShlishi, on the third day, she comes in to see the king. Again, 3 days, but not really 3 days, but the third day. What is this all about? And we go to a Pasuk in Hosea, which has nothing to do with human events, has nothing to do with individuals on a journey. Has to do with something, in a sense, much larger, much more meta than that. And Hosea talks of, in Hosea's Nevuah, Hashem talks about returning the people. Yechayenu miyomayim, and they say Hashem will revive us after 2 days. On the third day, he will raise us up and we'll live before him. Of course, the Christians love this pasuk. You can understand why. But notice that there's this whole motif that shows up throughout Tanakh, from early history in Tanakh to prophetic eschatological visions of a three-day period. What's that about? So I want you to think about it just in pure human terms. I tell you something amazing is going to happen. Something terrifying is going to happen. Something momentous is going to happen. And I tell that to you today. Today is Wednesday. I tell you right now on Wednesday, it's going to happen. Now, if I tell you it's going to happen in a month, what happens to you? You have lots of time to take care of other things. Say, okay, next week I'll take care of it. Or you're going to spend the whole month in such anxiety, you'll probably die of a heart attack in the meantime, depending on what it is. If I tell you, on the other hand, there's an amazing thing happening in 4 hours, then your adrenaline drives you, and there is no room for the other side of the feeling. What happens, and we'll start with Abraham. What happens when Hashem says to Abraham, go take your son? How does Avraham feel when he gets up in the morning? He's clearly energized. He's energized. He gets up early. He chops the wood. He starts going moving. He starts moving out. God's command. And I'm going to ask you, what must we imagine happens the next day. You can be driven for an entire day. Avram and his people camp out somewhere in the middle of nowhere and get up the next day. We're not home, and yet we're not there yet. So what must be going through his head? Suddenly, all of the questions, all of the hesitations, all of the concerns, there's room for them and room for him to deal with that. And what might happen on the third day? Or before the third day, he may turn around. He may stop the mission. What happens? The third day is the day when he has made the decision. The third day is the day when he's wrestled with himself for an entire day and finally gone to sleep at night saying, I'm doing it. And that's when he can see it. What happens when Moshe comes to Bnei Israel and says, fine, you want a brit? Guess what? You thought a brit, man, Hashem is going to send me with a message and we'll sign a brit and that's it. It's not. It's momentous. It's huge. It's scary. It's trembling. You're going to encounter God directly. I'm giving you 3 days to prepare. In order to prepare, you have to separate yourself from your sexual life, from your family life. Today, all of tomorrow, and then on the third day, it'll happen. So right now, I'm really excited. We're going to see God. That's amazing. What do you think happens the next day? All the trepidation, all the concern, all the questions. Am I ready for this? What's it going to be like? It's scary. And finally, when I go to sleep after that second night, I go to sleep with a resolve. And that's why I'm able to get up the next morning and the cloud covers the mountain and the sound comes down. That's the significance of Yom HaShlishi throughout Tanakh. Yonah has to be in there for 3 days until he can finally pray. Esther needs that amount of time before, because she can have the resolve to actually come forward and address the king. That's the magic, the special nature of Bayom HaShlishi. We take a look at it in our text, and we see this drasha that this Galilean shared, which is Brich Rachmana Diav Urin Tlita Lam Tlita Biyom HaTlita. Why does it make a big deal of being on the third day? So it could be that it just fits the drasha nicely because of all the threes, and it could be that he's saying that's part of the power of this people, that they're able to wrestle with all the doubts and all the questions and all the concerns and all the trepidations. And at the end of the second day, at the end of the full 24-hour day of wrestling, they're able to come with a commitment, we're going to go further. Just like Avraham did on that third day, and just like we were able to on third day, and we come to meet God at Har Sinai, to accept the Torah, and to ultimately say, Na'aseh v'nishma.